When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Happy Monday morning to you. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning into the program. And it's kind of a nice morning. It's like 68 degrees out there. That's not bad. I've got Chris Connors on the phone with me right now. Chris, hi. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, Andy?
Good. Thanks for coming on. Chris is the owner of Farmstead Bakery as well as FS Coffee House. Now, Farmstead has location. We know the one in St. George. We all know and love it. And you've got one in Springdale now and one coming soon in Hurricane. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so we have Hurricane will be on Main Street in Hurricane. That'll be like Main and State Street. It's right next to Dixie Nutrition, which has been there for a while. So we're going to be there. Our goal is to open up before Thanksgiving.
Nice.
So we're working on that space as we speak.
And then, of course, you've built it. Tell us about your Leeds facility. What's going on there?
So our Leeds warehouse is our primary baking facility. So we will do all the baking for future Farmsteads in southern Utah at that location. We have commercial grade equipment, much bigger space. And that's the problem that we had with our original location in downtown is we were kind of just running out of space. We didn't have a whole lot of cooler space or freezer space to properly cool pastries and things like that. So the Leeds location is a 7,000 foot facility. And we actually have better equipment in there now, and the product that is coming out is far superior to actually what we had a couple months ago.
Really?
Just baking at our downtown location. So I feel really good about that, and that'll provide Springdale, Hurricane, downtown St. George, and then FS Coffee Company as well.
One of the things that I'm super proud of, and first of all, I'm proud of you and the job you guys have done. I remember meeting you when you were first open, and I could sense in meeting you, first of all, a confidence that you were doing things right, but also a little bit of apprehension, new market, new restaurant, new everything. But you guys have managed to thrive where others have failed. Chris, how are you doing it?
Well, I mean, first off, it's extremely, restaurants are just extremely hard work.
Yeah.
If you want to work every day, if you want to be on call every hour of the day, go and own a restaurant. you know, it's not easy. And it's great for the first 6 months. Okay, you're kind of flying high, everyone's saying good job, all this kind of stuff, and then reality sets in, and you have people employees who quit or call in, or, you know, the employee turnover is the highest out of any industry in the country. The annual turnover rate for a restaurant is 70%.
Wow.
And if you compare that to, let's say, the financial industry or .com or whatever you... those are 20%, you know, so like you're hiring a little bit younger of a clientele, an employee base, a lot of them, it's their first job. Some of them come out of high school. Some of them come out of college. We're in kind of a college town,
yeah.
You know, so, our goal is to retain someone for a year. If we have them for any longer than a year, they get pay raises. You know, we try to treat them extremely well. We have a couple people who have been with us since day one. Actually, more than a couple, quite a few. But, you know, you try to treat everyone the way you want to be treated. It's that golden rule, you know. You want them to, we want an open dialogue with what makes them happy for as an employee, coming from an employee perspective, and I'll let them know what makes me happy, my job better, coming from an employer perspective, and then we just kind of find a middle ground. Everyone wants to be paid more, Andy, right? It's like everyone wants more money. I mean, that's a simple thing. Yeah, just pay them more. Well, you also have to create a good culture. You also have to create, and with our culture, you know, there shouldn't be a whole lot of, in the restaurant industry, there tends to be a lot of drama, you know?
Yeah.
And most of that comes with age and maturity of who you're hiring. You know, so we try to not incorporate that into who we are and what we do as a company. And, you know, have an open dialogue with employees.
Let's go back to these employees. Now, what is it like? You hear rumors you're not allowed to ask certain things when you're interviewing an employee. There's areas you can, you know, you can't ask about gender. It's just, you know, things like that, religion, yeah, whatever. So how much can you ask when you are interviewing an employee to hire? Because it seems like to me that's where it starts as an employer is finding the right people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate goal, is to find great people. I don't ask. I'm pretty general with my questions of what I ask. At the end of the day, Andy, every manager, every owner thinks they're great at hiring people.
Yeah.
We're all about 50-50. I mean, we really are. We have some winners. We have some losers. I mean, that's the way it is. You gotta react quickly on who you think the winners are, and attain those people. You know, and keep those people with you. And then some people just don't work out, but you usually have a good idea, or at least I do, within a week of employing them, of them starting, how they're going to be. My general questions during interviews are, tell me about yourself. Tell me how you got here. And I want to see their story. I want to, you know, I'm gonna just trust my gut as an employer. Anyone who you know, goes online and goes to farmsteadbakery.com, fills out an application, and tells us a little bit about themselves and what they're looking for. If they match up to kind of a general idea of what we're looking for, then I give them a call or I give them a text. Even better now, because no one responds to phone calls anymore.
Yeah.
And with a text, you have everything written down. It works a little bit better, actually, in my opinion. So I usually give them a text and try to schedule an interview. And some people just want to be hired right away. Some people are who I refer to as paycheck players. They just are there for the paycheck, and then they're going to move on to the next job that pays them more money.
Yeah.
I try to not hire the paycheck players. I want to hire someone who has a passion about food. Who has a passion about maybe travel, hospitality. Those three kind of like coincide with each other. So when you're interviewing a candidate, I just say, tell me about yourself, and then we try to have a conversation. If I can't have a conversation with a candidate, I can't expect them to have a conversation with a customer.
Yeah.
So I usually eliminate that candidate right then and there. I mean, I've asked questions like, hey, tell me about yourself. Well, what do you want to know? Well, I want to know about you. How did you get here? You know, what? Tell me about the last 5 years of your life, you know?
Yeah.
And then how did you solve problems? How did you solve this problem at your last job? You know, I noticed, you know, I interviewed someone at a fast food restaurant the other day, and I said, hey, how do you... When you get really busy, I noticed that in the drive-thru, you do the make and model of the car, okay? What if you have, like, four of the same cars? And then they gave us the whole rundown of it, and he got super enthusiastic, and you know, he broke down everything from A to Z, and that's kind of like what I was looking for. You know, so those things are a big deal.
Yeah. I'm curious, have you ever had an experience where you had someone who interviewed really well, but then weren't great employees, or maybe the reverse, someone that interviewed not very well and you hired them anyway and it turns out they were great employees. Obviously, you have rules. Are there exceptions to those rules?
Absolutely. All the time it happens. I'm like, this person's going to be great. And then it's it comes game time and they don't show up.
Ugh.
You know, and you're like, what happened to this person? You know, I mean, it happens all the time. What's the new phrase the kids use now? Ghosted. It ghosted.
Ghosted you.
That happens all the time. You just gotta. I mean, this is the restaurant industry, so, and it's business. You gotta move on. You can't dwell over all those things. We just lost our GM. He was with us for 2 years. Great guy. And a great GM. He did an unbelievable job for us. And I hate to see him go, but like that's life. And he went to a big resort that's opening. And you know what? At the end of the day, I'm happy about it because I know that he's going to continue our values that we taught him at Farmstead with that big resort. So I know I'm going to go to that restaurant. I know I'm going to be greeted as soon as I walk in. I know that the service is going to be good. I know it's going to be clean. I know, they're going to greet us in the right way and serve our food in the right way. So, you know, that's all about creating that community just kind of like one step at a time. And it starts with something small and moves to something big.
I wanted to ask you, Chris, about, so you're a hard worker. It's clear to me you're a former athlete. I remember years ago, now a lot of people look back and say, Larry Bird, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. Did you know, and I don't know if you knew this, maybe you did, Larry tried coaching for a little while after he had retired from playing, and he was a lousy coach. He was terrible. He couldn't get the guys to do the things that he did when he was a player. Well, obviously now you look back, you go, well, of course they can't do what Larry Bird did. Larry Bird was a once in a generation talent, but I'm curious now, when, you know, you were a former athlete, you're a guy that's used to working hard, setting goals, getting things done. Do you now, as a coach or the employer, do you now go, okay, how can I translate what I did to them? And then if it doesn't work, then, you know, what do you do?
Absolutely. So, well, let's just be really upfront and honest with each other. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. Okay.
Come on.
I work hard. I try to show people through my work ethic what can be done. I've gotten extremely lucky in my life through hard work and dedication. I always tell my managers, be the leader you wish you had.
Uh-huh.
Right? So be the leader you wish you had. If you need to encourage people, we need to develop people, especially in St. George. We don't have a high mark when it comes to food and beverage. There's not a lot of food and beverage professionals or hospitality professionals in this city yet.
Yeah.
So we need to develop people. We need to teach people. An 18-year-old, there's no reason why our new hire, an 18-year-old, can't learn the same things as a 27-year-old, 37-year-old that we also have in the organization. So we need to develop. If we can't develop, we're going to go away real quick.
I think now that I look back on it, I'm thinking about, I think Michael Jordan tried coaching for a while too after he had retired, and that didn't work out so well either. So the translation, just because you were good doesn't mean that, one thing doesn't mean you're good at the other. So yeah, definitely some pressure to become a good manager. I've heard people, Chris, say, well, young people today, they don't work hard. They don't know how to work hard. Their parents have catered to them, and their, you know, kids are just, they can't do it. And you're a guy who's on the front lines with these young people. You hire regularly, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 year olds all the time. Is that statement true? Do kids not have a work ethic today that they did, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I would disagree with it. I think they have different skills. They have different skill sets. For example, when we have a new hire come in and they're 18 years old, they know that point of sales machine better than I do within 3 hours. They know that machine really quick because they kind of grew up with electronics and stuff. Now, speaking to people, speaking to guests, some people, some kids now are a little awkward. Now, keep in mind, this is a COVID kind of thing, too, from, you know, not going to school, not interacting with people. We have, we have those things to kind of overcome. But as soon as they get out of their shell, I think this is a great opportunity for us to capture a new style, a new demographic. And things are constantly changing throughout history. You know, I'm sure when I was 18 years old, we had people older than me saying, oh, we're totally messed up now with this new generation coming in. I mean, some of them are great at certain things, and some of them will change the world, you know? And then, you know, I think you have this throughout history. You have, good things and bad things that you take from every generation. With this generation, they're a little bit less personable at the very beginning until they kind of find their way and they get a little bit more comfortable.
I have a daughter of mine. She's 20 now, but when she was in high school, that COVID year when, you know, everybody had to wear masks all day in school, yeah. And she had one teacher. She said, I had never met this. It was a new teacher. Said, I never met the teacher. I didn't know what she looked like until halfway through the year when we were allowed to take the masks off. And because the mask, I mean, that covered, you know, from your eyes all the way down below your chin. But I had a couple of kids, Chris, that were right in the thick of all that. My older daughter didn't get to graduate from high school. I mean, she graduated, but that was a COVID year. They didn't have graduation. Yep. And so there are definitely some social challenges with them that they've had to overcome that you and I didn't.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind, you know, we have to be resilient with those type of challenges, you know. So it's I could tell right away when I hire someone and, you know, they just grew up specifically in their family and they haven't really been introduced to like outside elements yet. And that's okay. It's just they're young people. So it's our job to kind of show them how to greet people when they come in, how to treat a customer when they have a question, and all those things. And they'll learn as they go. And most of them do it. Most of them do it. And then they come out of their shell. I hired a guy, what is it, a year ago now. He was 16, super awkward. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this kid is super awkward. I'm going to have to train him a little bit. And now he's awesome. You know, and I can't keep him quiet. He's always talking to customers. He loves it.
That is so cool. I wanted to ask you a couple more things before I let you go. Number one, wages. You mentioned, you know, some people are just in it, but, you know, working for the paycheck. What do you have to pay in this current society that we're in to hire an employee and to keep an employee?
I think to give you a quick answer, I think it's anywhere between $17 and $20 an hour.
Wow, for a 16 or 17-year-old kid, huh?
Yeah, so all in, including like their tips and things like that, they're about $17 to $20 an hour. I think if you're paying less than maybe 16, you're going to have turnover because you're just going to have other people looking for jobs.
Yeah.
You know, so like at Farmstead, you know, we start someone at like $10 an hour, and then they get gratuities on their paycheck. So they're around 18, 19 an hour. Some people are making 22 an hour. And then you go up into a management style hourly wage, and they make more than that. You know, we typically have higher labor percentages than most restaurants, but we have higher retention. So, you know, it costs about $2,000 to hire an employee when you train them, when you take someone else to train them, when you give them a uniform, when you, you know, take your time and all that kind of stuff. I'd rather pay someone an extra dollar or two an hour and try to retain that employee for a year or two.
Well, you think about the cost of training, like you were saying, holy smokes. Yeah, it's definitely worth it to pay them just a little bit more and keep them. The other question I was going to ask you about was I've had people that say, all right, I go to a store. If I'm standing and they whip that thing around that says tip, I'm not tipping them. If I have to stand up to get my food, I'm not tipping them. How have tips changed over the last few years? I mean, back in the day, it seemed like if someone brought you food, you tipped them. Mm-hmm. If you had to get it yourself, you didn't. I don't know if that old rule applies anymore.
I think it just depends on the person who's paying. If they think they're being provided a good service, by all means, tip. If they don't, you know, I went to a place today and they asked for a tip. They didn't greet me. They didn't say hello. They didn't answer any of my questions. They just basically rung me up.
Yeah.
Does that person deserve a tip? Probably not. But if you're providing a service, I think it all depends on the customer, though. I mean, you're more than welcome to do whatever you want at Farmstead or at FS Coffee. Tips are necessary because if employers have to compensate hourly wages higher, all they're going to do is raise their prices.
Yeah.
So in order to accommodate that, in order to make those numbers work. So, you know, when you're leaving a gratuity, especially in the food industry, that helps the employer. There's no doubt that it helps the employer. I mean, Utah's $2.13 an hour if they come to your table, if you're like at the Black Bear Diner or something like that. So those employers, their labor percentage is very low because they're paying someone $2.13 an hour. That's not the case at Farmstead. We pay higher because it's not a position where we go to the table and it's not a waiter waitress type of scenario.
Yeah.
So we have to pay above that. We have to pay above federal minimum wage, which we do. And we're at the end of the day, we're competing against people at a sit down restaurant. We're trying to get those same employees.
Can you real quick demystify the tip process as far as your end of things? You have, of course, the computer will keep track of all the tips all day long. Do you then split it up equally with all employees, or do they have their name on each one, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we actually put their gratuities on their paycheck. So they have a better ability to, let's say, get a car loan or a home loan. We've had several employees buy a home here in southern Utah because that tip rule that we have that goes on your paycheck, you don't necessarily walk with cash. So it's easier to get a loan in that way. And we divvy everything up equally.
Okay.
So, that works for us. Some people don't do that. Some people have everyone leave with cash, on hand, or on their, credit card tips. Those usually, go on a paycheck, or they take them home and they do tip out at the end of their shift. That's what most sit-down restaurants do, to my knowledge.
Okay, very cool. Chris Connors from Farmstead. Chris, thanks for taking a little while with us. I just, like I said, I'm so happy that you've been successful and you've done things the right way. I'm not going to speak for you, but from what I can tell, you know, you won't get the cheapest baked goods at Farmstead, but you'll get the best baked goods at Farmstead. And that's what really matters, is getting the best for a good value.
No doubt. Value brings volume. And I think we offer a great value at Farmstead and FS Coffee Company. We love Southern Utah. And thanks for having me on, Andy. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Great to talk to you, Chris. See you later.
Okay, take care.
Now, folks, I did want to mention, I talked to Chris right after I got back from Europe. Now, the pastries in Europe, I got to tell you, these little towns, they've got like four or five bakeries that have amazing pastries. And I told Chris when I got back from Europe, I'm like, you know, there's only one place in this town that has pastries comparable to those in Europe. And that is Farmstead, and I stand by that. Everyone else is, they're not measuring up, but Farmstead is there. That was one of my favorite things about Europe, and I'm so glad we have Farmstead here in town that can hang with the big boys. All right, we're going to get a weather break in and more on the Andy Griffin Show after this quick timeout.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Good morning, 9:36 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Thanks again to Chris Connors for being on the show. You know, I've said it many times. I was able to go on a cruise out of Galveston last year. And maybe it's been 2 years now. Anyway, it's one of the things that I was struck with that I don't know. we start believing all the noise, the loudness that is the political world that we live in, and we start believing it. And what I'm finding out, what I found out on that cruise was America is still America. It's still families, moms and dads, grandpas and grandmas, kids, nephews, and it's still there. It's just that it's hard to see or hard to hear because of all the fog of war, if you will, fog and noise that we get on an everyday basis. I found an article today about it's off of Deseret.com and their what do they call this? The latest section. It's an opinions piece written by Jay Evanson. And I met Jay a few times. Pretty good guy. Anyway, he talks about how Americans are still honest. He said, having watched the debate and, of course, the fact checkers working overtime because both candidates are saying things that are, well, at the very best, stretching the truth, at the very worst, flat out lies and exaggerations. And he said, but even though our political leaders are sometimes fudging the truth a little bit or exaggerating or whatever you want to call it, Americans, for the most part, they're still pretty honest. And then he gives some really good examples. I'm going to read you a couple of these. In Massachusetts last Sunday, a man who prefers to be known only as Skip happened to find $12,000 in cash in the parking lot of a grocery store. Now, put yourself in Skip's shoes. Okay, you park, you see something on the ground, an envelope on the ground, you bend over and pick it up. Inside this envelope, little brown manila envelope, is $12,000 in cash. What do you do? I think the perception is, and I don't agree with this perception, but I think the perception is, hey, I just got lucky. $12,000, no name anywhere on the envelope, in the envelope, near the money. It's my lucky day. I just got 12 grand. Right? That's the perception. That's what a lot of folks, especially folks that lean left, would say. Oh, that's good stuff. Well, that's not what Skip did, and that's not what you or I would do. I don't believe. Maybe you're yelling at me saying, yeah, you're wrong, Andy. I would keep it. But this is what Skip did. According to the Telegram and Gazette, the owner of the cash, a guy by the name of Van, a woman named Van, didn't realize that she had dropped the envelope until she got home from the store. Now, if you have $12,000 in cash and you drop it, I don't know. Maybe that money isn't that much to some people. That's a lot of money to me. I'm going to make sure I know exactly where that $12,000 is. But anyway, she didn't realize she didn't have it until she got home. She and her nephew hurried back to the store frantically, where the store manager reviewed surveillance video, but they couldn't see any evidence of where she dropped it or what happened to it. No idea. So her and her nephew, after reviewing video evidence, started to leave the store. Very sad. We didn't find the money. It's gone forever. Only, here's the thing. While they were leaving the store, a guy named Skip was standing at the service counter, anxious to turn in the money he had just found and find the rightful owner. The nephew that was with Van said, it takes a special kind of person to do something so honest and selfless. And Skip, you are a true example of integrity and compassion. Thank you, Skip. You've touched more lives than you know today. All right, there's one example. Another example, we'll go out to Denver. A guy by the name of Greg Thow, T-H-O-W, T-H-O-W, and note the spelling, some kind of parlay bet in a bar. So he's hanging out with his buddies and he won some money, $511, not anywhere close to the $12,000 that the previous person had lost, but still $500. And it was put in an envelope with his name on it. And after he left the bar, he went to the bank to deposit the money, felt around in his pockets and found absolutely nothing. The envelope was gone. He had dropped it, apparently, on his walking from the bar to the bank. and nobody saw him drop it, but somebody found the envelope, a girl named Carla. The only problem, whoever had written his name on the envelope spelled the name T-H-R-O-W, throw, instead of T-H-O-W, thou, which was his name. So this lady, who was from Memphis, was in Denver on vacation, went home with the money, with the envelope full of money, knowing it's not hers. She's like, I had never had any intention of keeping it, and started searching the internet for people named Thro in Denver. Well, she searched and searched and searched. It actually took several weeks, and she still hadn't found anybody named Thro that had lost some money. So she decided to take a chance on a guy named Thow, T-H-O-W, in Denver, who said he had lost some money. She got a hold of this guy and said, listen, if you can tell me exactly how much money was in the envelope and describe what kind of envelope it was, then I will return the money to you. He did, and she did. Again, honesty in America. I love it. One more in Wisconsin now. A person found a bag with $1,600 cash in it. That's a lot of money. The bag also had a deposit slip that had no account number on it. He turned it into the local police, who later received a call from a woman who was able to describe the bag and the money that she had lost. Police told TV station WBAY it was refreshing to see a person willing to do the right thing. In other words, you know, it's funny. It's refreshing to see the person do the right thing. They make it sound like this never happens, that TV station. Oh, yeah, this is refreshing. Nobody's ever honest. Actually, it sounds like to me a lot of people are honest. If I ask you right now, okay, walking along the street, you find an envelope, and it has $767 in it. No name. You're right there on the boulevard. You're walking along. There's an envelope on the ground. You pick it up. There's $767 in it. What are you going to do with the money? Okay. Now, your answer might be, well, I'm going to turn it into the police, or maybe the store that it was in front of or whatever. Okay. Let me ask you this now. If you're going to do the right thing, why are you going to do the right thing? Are you going to do the right thing because you figure the person who the money belongs to is going to track you down? No. Are you going to do the right thing because somebody saw you pick it up and they might accuse you of stealing the money? Are you going to do that? Why are you going to do the right thing? What is your motivation? And I would submit to you that most Americans, not all, don't get me wrong, there are bad people out there. Most of them in politics, it seems like, but not all would turn the money in, but I think most of us would do the right thing because it is the right thing to do. It's called values. It's called standards. It's called doing the right thing, being a stand-up person, being a good person. I think most of us would do the right thing, whatever side of the political aisle you fall on. I think most of us would go, that's not my money. Somebody needs that money. In that one lady's case, she said, I could, for me, it was, and this had happened last December, like the second week of December. She said, I pictured in my head when I found this envelope with money that was somebody's Christmas presents. That money was, that was going to bring joy to people's hearts. And she said, I didn't want to rob anybody of joy. I wanted them to be happy. I wanted to do the right thing because I knew that doing the right thing would make someone feel good. I think we're basically honest, good people still, despite the noise out there, despite the claims and the headlines and the comments. Oh, man, you get lost in the comments on a story. Ugh. My wife likes to do that. It drives me nuts, but I think we're good people. And, you know, we might slow down and look at a car crash, not literally, but figuratively, because we want to see, but we also don't want to see.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:51. Want to comment on a few news headlines. First of all, I am getting reports right now that Verizon is having some issues nationwide. If you own a Verizon phone, you may... It's weird because they're talking about having an outage nationwide, but only some of the phones are affected. Basically, about half the phones are going to SOS mode. Let's see. Steph comments, mine and my husband's are fine, but my coworkers in my office with me, their phones have all gone to SOS mode and they don't work. One guy says, my Verizon phone's working in Vegas. Another person comments and says, mine is stuck on SOS mode, but my husband, same company, same account, is working just fine. Another person says, I got full bars and 4G. Another one says, my husband's is not working. It's on SOS mode again. So if you have a Verizon phone, apparently they are having some issues today. Sounds like maybe one of those cyber hack things, but I'm just speculating on that. A couple of other news stories. Sienna Johnstone is still missing. That is that 16-year-old girl who went missing last, I think it was, 5 days ago, so last Wednesday. She was at the Utah Arts Academy and has been missing ever since. She's wearing black crop top with a cat on it, black cargo pants with white stitching, and a black backpack. 16-year-old Sienna Johnstone. Sorry, there's not an R. It's an N. Sienna Johnstone is 5'3 and 150 pounds. If you have any information, contact the St. George non-emergency line at 628. St. George Police non-emergency line is 627-4300. About the weather, holy cow, it's hot. Now, the good thing is at least it's cooling down at night, but we're in for another 100-degree day today. If it reaches 100 tomorrow, tomorrow is October 1st. Did you know that St. George has never, in the history of our city, well, in the recorded history of our city, reached 100 degrees in the month of October? The forecast says 101 for a high tomorrow. We may actually do that. Last time it got close was 44 years ago in 1980. I was 14, and the high got up to 99. The average high temperature for October 1st is 87. So, according to Cedric Haynes, that's our ABC4 weather meteorology, said there's a strong high-pressure ridge is bringing us that wonderful heat. Apparently, the ridge kind of got cut off by a storm front that cooled things, a cold front that cooled things down in northern Utah, but it's still 100 or 2 miles from us, so we get the pleasure of it still being hot. Isn't that dandy? All right. So I had the opportunity for the last couple of days of having my son and daughter-in-law and granddaughter stay with us. And I'm not going to throw them under the bus, but I will say parenting is a little different now than it was when I was a kid. For instance, they go in, this little 1.5-year-old, they go in and they hold her to sleep. They don't just put her in the room and shut the door. They actually stay with her and hold her and rub her back or whatever until she falls asleep. There's a funny story online. This was on Intellectual Takeout, written by Lenore Skenazy. She said, I must rant. Why? I just heard from a mom trying to get two other families to let their kids play with her kids in her yard for an hour a week, unsupervised. An hour a week. She lives on a quiet street in a quiet suburb in a quiet state, classic single family home, zero traffic. Other parent who says, okay, but only in the backyard. He worries that in the front yard, something could happen to this kid, and if it did, I would kill myself. His actual words. This kind of florid fantasizing and self-flagellation is not normal. It may feel that way because we hear it all the time now, but it is the product of a sick culture wiring parents to not only catastrophize, that's a big word, but to literally not be able to see reality. A bunch of kids playing together on a front lawn, not even down the street, but in the front yard, it isn't 100% safe, of course, but it is safer than almost any childhood activity since the dawn of time. It is, in fact, super safe. If that isn't safe enough, the parent must be dreaming of life on some other planet where there are no cars, no adults, no crime, no pavement, no pebbles, no dogs, no banana peels, and really just no life. If his kid was the only child in the universe and was wearing a tracker and a hard hat and knee pads, maybe then that child would be safe enough for that single hour of free play that the mom was proposing. Thinking that way is normal is why we have to press the reset button on parenting. It's as sick as believing all people are out to get you, paranoia, right? Or all food is poisonous. It's looking at a patch of grass and seeing a pit of fire the kid will quite possibly fall into and where dad will follow because he deserves it because he left the kid. That's nuts. And yet it's so, so common. Trace it back. Was it our fault as parents of the baby boomers, Gen Xers? I'm right in the middle of those two. Did we coddle our parents? Was our desire to make life better for our kids than it was for us? Did that start the problem right there? And so our kids, in a desire to make their kids' lives better than theirs was, even though theirs was pretty good, has maybe gone too far. It's maybe gotten them to the point of, I can't let my kid ever fail at anything ever again. I can't let my kid ever be in even slight danger. If I do, I'm a failure as a parent. Our parents, or at least our grandparents, didn't go straight down this doomed death, all my fault, not worth ever taking my eyes off my kid path every time their kids left the house. The cure would be what? Same one that shrinks use for obsessive compulsive disorder. Exposure therapy. That dad needs to spend an hour someplace else without his eyes on his kids. When he comes back and sees his kid is actually fine for an hour on her own, even on the front lawn, it has become impossible to keep imagining her dead from a game of tag. This exposure therapy for our entire culture can't happen soon enough. And if it works, maybe the dad will let the kid play for 2 hours a week instead of 1 hour a week. That was Lenore Skenazy from Intellectual Takeout. And, only thing I have to say about that is, again, parents, understand that your kids are going to fall down. They're going to scrape their knee. They're going to break a leg, maybe, or an arm sometime. I mean, that's childhood. Do we want them to die? Heavens no. We want to keep our kids safe, but let's chill out a little bit. Let's let our kids fail every once in a while. In failure, I've learned this all the years of covering sports. When you lose, you learn so much more after you lose than you do after you win. Kids become so much more teachable when they failed, because they want to know why and they want to know how to fix it. And if we never let them fail, they're never going to learn those lessons. Signing off, folks. Thanks for listening.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get delicious Kroger pasta sauce or pasta for 99 cents each with your card. Then get tender, fresh Tyson boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.